Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're talking about the FBI Inspector General report this week that reveals that some FBI agents at Gitmo opened what they called a war crimes file on their fellow interrogators from other agencies, that top FBI officials protested the techniques at the highest levels of government but were brushed off, and that some of the same techniques that became infamous at Abu Ghraib were not just the acts of a few rogue soldiers or a few bad apples. At least by implication of this report, they were apparently approved U.S. policy techniques. So with me now, Washington Post correspondent Carrie Johnson, who's been covering the story. Carrie, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
You heard FBI Director, Deputy Director John Miller there. Any reaction to what he had to say?
Well, it's a very fair point that the Inspector General, after a very lengthy investigation involving 500,000 documents and hundreds of interviews, generally gave the FBI fair marks for how it handled its concerns and passed concerns of line agents up the chain as many as 5 years ago with regard to interrogations at Guantanamo Bay, Afghanistan, and Iraq.
In terms of the FBI's own behavior, and Miller didn't want to go beyond that, clearly, but the bigger picture of the IG's report, and I guess the FBI Inspector General is supposed to inspect the activities of the FBI, but the implications here are what I was just saying, that some of the same techniques that became infamous at Abu Ghraib and were written off as the acts of a few bad apples were apparently approved U.S. policy because they were going on elsewhere. These same things that you would think, who would dream up leashing prisoners and having them act like dogs, or making them male prisoners put on women's underwear and having them interrogated naked by female detainees, that, you know, the famous Abu Ghraib things were going on elsewhere.
Brian, one of the most chilling parts of this very long report, which we're all still digesting, is how many line agents reported witnessing themselves or hearing tell of some very troublesome interrogation techniques. The most common was sleep deprivation. There were also extreme temperatures and a variety of religious abuses and strange behaviors involving female interrogators and nudity. These were things that were witnessed not only at Abu Ghraib, but also at Guantanamo Bay early on. And factors that FBI agents passed up through their chain of command, through the Justice Department, in which we now know because of this report, Justice Department officials shared at the National Security Council and in policy meetings with high-level officials representing the State Department, the CIA, and other organizations.
Let me take a call right away reacting to John Miller, and it's Jeffrey in Manhattan. Jeffrey, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Delighted to be here.
Go ahead.
I'm kind of tired of listening to people like John Miller, who say that it's perfectly all right to leave it alone once the Office of Legal Counsel says that it's all right and that the torture was legal. I mean, that, it seems to me, was exactly what the defense of the Nuremberg criminals was, and the result of the Nuremberg trials was that it seems to me that we all have a higher responsibility, that there's a higher law that we have to adhere to, and if we feel that these rules are handed down by our political leaders are wrong, we have to stand up and say, no, we will not do that.
Yeah, you picked up on what I also thought was one of the most interesting things that John Miller said there, and Carrie Johnson from The Washington Post, you know, he talked about this war crimes file, and of course it's shocking to all of us who hear this story that FBI agents opened something called a war crimes file on interrogators from the CIA and the military and private contractors. But he gave a very direct answer saying that file was closed when it was determined that there was no criminal case to actually pursue in a formal sense from the FBI because the opinion of the administration was that these activities were legal. was that new information to you, that there was an official war crimes file begun, but also that the FBI concluded that there was no illegality there?
The fact that the FBI agents had collected their concerns in writing was not particularly newsworthy. The fact that the Inspector General and the line FBI agents may have called it a war crimes file did attract a lot of attention and seemed new. We've known for some time now that there were opinions after the September 11th terror attacks by lawyers in the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel that gave legal blessing and protection to numerous tactics that some people deem torture.
But there's a question here of independence, which is what the caller raises. Just because the president says it's legal doesn't necessarily mean it's legal. Scholars and lawyers dispute that, and yet I guess there's no structure, no independent structure for somebody to bring anybody up on war crimes or other kinds of charges with respect to this, because the Justice Department is in the chain of command of the president, who might actually be one of the accused.
Well, one of the reasons why the name John Yoo has become so often used and mentioned is that this fellow, who was a deputy in the Office of Legal Counsel, wrote a number of these controversial memos we're still trying to win access to. And his role, which he describes as completely valid, is under investigation by the by internal Justice Department watchdogs who police ethical behavior. That said, the Office of Legal Counsel traditionally has been a gold standard, and the reason that office exists is to give people in the government a sense of where the lines are, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So when the OLC issues an opinion saying these things are legal, it's quite difficult for investigators to come back in 2020 hindsight and say, we know there was an opinion out there blessing this behavior, but you should have known better.
Right.
It's quite difficult to make a criminal case, which is, I think, what John Miller was saying, on that basis.
And what about a political case? Are congressional Democrats anywhere on this after this report? I mean, there have been arguments that these are even impeachable offenses by people like former Congresswoman Liz Holtzman and the Center for Constitutional Rights. Where's Speaker Pelosi? Where's Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid in reacting to these things? Are they just, considering them political liabilities to be too out front on in this election year, and so they're not saying much?
Well, the people who have come out on Capitol Hill with the strongest statements this week are Senator Carl Levin, who heads the Armed Services Committee and has been looking at interrogation practices and detainee treatment for some time. Levin in particular said this report, this massive 370-page report by the Inspector General, shows this wasn't merely a case of a few bad apples. This was policy that was dictated down the line, and he's exploring that, as are the Senate and House Judiciary Committee Chairman. House Judiciary Committee Chairman John Conyers is holding a hearing next month at which he's asked John Yoo, the former Office of Legal Counsel deputy, as well as David Addington, a top advisor to Vice President Cheney and a guy who was in the room during a lot of these discussions, to testify about their role. It remains unclear how open and forthcoming those current and former administration officials will be, however, about internal debates and their rationale for making these judgments.
And what about the presidential candidates, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John McCain? Have they reacted to this report this week, as far as you know?
I have not seen public comment, but I can't say that I've been scanning every wire service story and newspaper story to look for that. Nothing has appeared on my radar screen in that regard, however.
Right, and I did a quick search this morning and didn't come up with anything.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean they didn't, but it probably means they didn't prominently. But Norm in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Washington Post correspondent Carrie Johnson. Hello.
Good morning. I just wanted to offer for a moment an alternative perspective, which is, how do we grapple with the fact that we're dealing with an enemy who adheres to very different rules of engagement that we do, and that under their rules of engagement, they may come into our backyards, come into our homes, and kill us?
Well, how do you? Does it mean that we do the same things to them that they will do to us? Or not that these are necessarily the same things, but what do you think it means? Does it make it okay to you for the U.S. government, as approved policy to do the kinds of things that were documented at Abu Ghraib.
I think we're finding our way. I think we're certainly not going to lower ourselves to the murderous level that they've approached us with. At the same time, we're not dealing with an enemy that embraces the Geneva Convention. So I think what this administration has tried to say is that different rules may imply that all bets are off. You know, we're in a new world. We're in a post-9/11 world. I think that's what they were saying.
Norm, thank you very much. And Carrie Johnson, I think what the FBI statement that I cited with John Miller said is that, I'm just going to read it again, or this excerpt from it. Consistent with our long history of success in custodial interrogations, FBI policy is to employ the same non-coercive, rapport-based interview techniques to detainees encountered in military zones that we employ every day in every aspect of our mission, whether in the U.S. or abroad. So they seem to be saying that even with al-Qaeda suspects, it's the non-coercive, rapport-based interview techniques that are going to be the most effective, never mind the most moral, just the most effective in getting the information that the United States needs. Is that a source of ongoing disagreement in terms of what the most effective interrogation techniques are for the United States interests?
Brian, I don't cover the CIA, so I can't tell you what their position is mm-hmm. on this. And also, they're not awfully forthcoming about it for clear reasons. That said, you're very right in drawing this distinction. This report by the Inspector General this week cited two forms of objection by both FBI and high-level Justice Department officials, including Michael Chertoff, who was then the head of the Criminal Division and is now head of the Department of Homeland Security. Chertoff said, listen, we're just quite clear that these aggressive techniques that some have likened to torture don't get actionable intelligence of the sort we need. And moreover, the use of these techniques is going to taint whatever future prosecutions we want to bring against these individuals. That certainly has come back to haunt the government, as it's tied up with military commissions that may or may not be derailed because defense lawyers are claiming a lot of evidence was gained through the use of torture. Secondly, there were some line FBI agents and others within the Justice Department, including a guy named Bruce Swartz, who was a Criminal Division deputy at the time, who were raising moral objections to this behavior as well. So there are two levels there. I'd also add, as a point of fairness, in response to Norm, your previous caller, mm-hmm. that it's quite easy for us to say 7 years after the fact and and with no new terror attacks, thank God, on U.S. soil, that some of these behaviors were crazy or outlandish. But it's very difficult to go back in time to the period after 9/11 when authorities and regular citizens, many of us, thought that another attack was on its way and that we needed to move very, very quickly in order to prevent that from happening.
And that's a fair thing to point out,
right,
that this report references a point in time, which was shortly after 9/11, when, as you say, we didn't know if another attack was imminent. However, the Senate and the House passed that interrogations bill in 2006 that specifically exempted the CIA from these new standards, which is either to say that this is still going on now as an ongoing intelligence gathering technique or the set of techniques, you know, or that they just want to reserve the option for the CIA in the rare instance where they think something is really imminent for them to do this under the law.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going on. I mean, you hear administration officials, current and former, talk about the Jack Bauer 24 situation or scenario in which you may have an hour as an interrogator to gain some intelligence to prevent an attack. And what do you do? What's on the table? What's not on the table in that kind of situation, worst-case scenario situation?
We have a few minutes left with Washington Post correspondent Carrie Johnson, who's been covering the FBI Inspector General report released this week that reveals that some agents at Gitmo opened what they called a war crimes file on their fellow interrogators in 2002, that top FBI officials protested the techniques at the highest levels of government but were brushed off, and that some of the same techniques that became infamous at Abu Ghraib, like leashing prisoners and making them act like dogs and making them be interrogated naked or wearing women's underwear if they were men while being interrogated by female officers, went on elsewhere in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Gitmo. And Carrie, your lead angle yesterday was about how the degree of dissent that the FBI voiced in 2002 is greater than previously known. How much dissent was there? What's new here?
Well, there was a fair amount of communication, both orally and in the form of written reports, that went up the chain at the FBI from line agents stationed at Gitmo to bureaucrats at Washington headquarters, to the Justice Department, which, of course, oversees the FBI. And Justice Department officials, at least a few of them, issued their own concerns in writing and in the form of regular meetings with National Security Council officials back in 2002 and 2003. We know that those meetings took place. But what remains unclear to this day is who was advocating for what in those meetings. We know what position won out, which is to say that the Defense Department and military contractors continue to carry out these interrogation strategies for some time to come. What we still are very curious about, as a matter of history, though, is how forcefully those objections were raised in those White House meetings and who took which side.
Jerry in Long Beach, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me on. Brian, as someone who lived in New York almost my entire life and heard John Miller on TV many times, fighting many causes or championing many positions, I'm kind of befuddled by what he had to say. I mean, to me, a lot of this has to do with right and wrong. I mean, is the government so compartmentalized now that one part of the government can act in one way and another part of the government can act in another way, and then neither criticizes each other? I mean, how secure are our rights if I'm accused of being one of the people that might bomb a building? So I'm just very disappointed in his position. I understand he's a federal employee now and that he has to do what is necessary in his job, but it just seems amazing to me that the FBI can be vociferous in its pursuit of any American who they feel has done wrong, but they're just going to carte blanche allow these agencies to make their own determinations on what is right and wrong.
Jerry, thank you for your call. And for those of you just joining us, Jerry was referring to the previous guest, Deputy FBI Director John Miller, a former investigative reporter for ABC News and Channel 4 here in New York. And my current guest, Washington Post correspondent Carrie Johnson. Were you perplexed at all? Were you surprised at all, as Jerry in Long Beach was, by John Miller's refusal to cross that line from saying the FBI sticks to non-coercive interrogation techniques and believes these are the most effective and the right for us, and criticizing the CIA or anyone else who's using the other interrogation techniques as somehow crossing a moral line?
Well, it's my belief, based on a reading of this 370-page report from earlier this week, that the FBI did, in fact, criticize the CIA and the Department of Defense and these techniques, but it did so within the chain of command at the time, 5 years ago.
So he just
years ago.
Wouldn't want to do it to the media, even though they may be or may have been jumping up and down, yelling and screaming behind closed doors?
Well, listen, Brian, It's clear from this report that there were bitter internal debates going back as long as 5 or 6 years ago about some of these practices. The FBI and some people in the Justice Department and perhaps some others in the government and the federal government also dissented. They lost. And it's worth noting that President Bush in the last few weeks had pointed out that, yes, there were high-level meetings in the White House about these tactics, and he approved of them. So it seems to me a little naive to criticize one agency,
right?
When this was a top-down approach that the government followed in those years.
So it was from the very top down policy. And so my last question is, who ultimately holds the U.S. accountable for these actions if they, in fact, are war crimes a matter of legal disagreement, and as the FBI at least considered by opening a, quote, war crimes file on these interrogation techniques? We don't belong to the International Criminal Court. Where's the ultimate accountability?
I think it's difficult to answer that question. Certainly, many, many historical records have been made, and we'll learn more in the years to come about who said what and who did what when. And history will make judgments about that, as will American voters, seems to me.
There is at least the politics, and let's see if any of the presidential candidates actually come out and make this an overt issue. Washington Post correspondent Carrie Johnson covering the FBI Inspector General's report on interrogation techniques. Thanks so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure to be with you.